Today's show is brought to you by our friends at Keeneland and Keeneland Select. Reminder that you can watch Keeneland Racing from any location and bet directly from your phone with Keeneland Select. Keeneland Select is offering a lucrative promotion for new signups this month. Sign up for a new account with Keeneland Select and you get a special $100 back after you wager $200 on Keeneland Racing this April. This is on top of the normal Keeneland Select bonus that allows you to earn $100 after you wager $300 in the first 30 days. Sign up and tell your friends. Go to KeenelandSelect.com and use the promo code ITM21. Welcome to the In the Money Players podcast. This is our show for Tuesday, March 30th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you up in the cabin in Maine. Going to be here for another day and a half before heading back down to the Brooklyn Bunker for a brief cameo appearance before heading out to Keeneland later this week. Speaking of Keeneland, a little bit later in the show, we're going to have their director of simulcasting and podcast host in his own right, Jim Goodman, on with us. A little bit later, we're going to have the hosts of the Exacta Box podcast, our first foray into Spanish language broadcasting on the In the Money Media Network, Ramon Dominguez and Jose Francisco Rivera. Looking forward to talking to them. But we kick things off with the man we usually speak to on these shows. He's coming to you from the planet Texas. He is the People's Champion. He's Jonathan Kitchen. What's up, JK?
PTF, I actually listened to Exacta Box the other day on my way home from picking Austin up from school. I know you know this, not everyone else does, that Austin's in Spanish immersion. So he was like, "Dad, this is a great idea."
So that's so cool.
And I said, "Yeah, it was all my idea." Not really. It was actually, it was all Ramon and Pete's doing, but he did listen to it. We listened to it on the way home and he was, you know, he's doing pretty good. He's been in it for 3 years now, and it's a pretty intense program here. So pretty cool.
That's awesome. Perrin also, coincidentally, in a Spanish language immersion program. I didn't think to make her listen to Exacta Box, but I should. I'll make her translate the bits that I don't understand. Ramon was telling me, and I'll ask him about this, that this week he already has sat down and spoken to Eric Cancel. And maybe that's where we'll start our analysis of this weekend. What a run he had, JK. The six bagger on Sunday, closing day of the winter meet. And oh, by the way, he happened to win the last two races on the Saturday card as well. Furious late run, Zenyatta-like closing fractions to get up and win what I believe is his first riding title. Just an amazing performance. Your thoughts on Cancel as a rider and his accomplishments this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I'll say is that couldn't have gone to the wrong person. It was between two guys that I root for like crazy, Kendrick and Eric. I wasn't going to be angry either way, but really happy for Eric. And here's why. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I got to meet Eric, and I know you did as well, hanging out with Angel Cordero, and you know they have that Puerto Rican connection, and I got to really like Eric. He's funny. He's engaging. He's always around. He works hard, and he just hasn't had the same luck as his running mates. His running mates being, you know, the Ortiz brothers, and then Manny. And so I've always rooted for Eric. I like Eric personally. I probably, when other people have looked at a horse and said, "Well, Eric's riding," I've never had that problem because I like him. So I can deal with it. And I also realize that he wasn't given a bunch of opportunities. And when you're not given a bunch of opportunities, you don't have a lot of confidence. It's hard to make the right decisions, whether it's being aggressive, whether it's getting off of a dead rail a couple years ago at Saratoga. It's hard to do that because the trainer is going to yell at you for losing ground if they're not aware the rail is dead. To see him have this success is awesome for a lot of reasons. One, he's a new father. So to kind of have that career take that next turn, I think is really great. And then for all these trainers to now have some confidence in what Eric can do. Eric's not going to be I guess we'll ride Eric now. He's going to have a little bit more umph to his name when you mention it to an owner. He won the Aqueduct title. You could tell your owner when you want to put him on a horse. I'm very happy for him. An unbelievable run to win all of those races on Sunday. He was down four, if I'm not mistaken. I think he finished up one or up two, maybe. Remarkable performance by him, and very happy for him and his family.
Great answer. I didn't prep you for that. You nailed it. But the other thing I liked is there were a couple of those rides I just felt like were so perfect. I wish I could have had the horses' names at the ready. But there was one of the speed horses he was on. And for a second there, I was worried that he was going to let the closer get to him before he took off. Nope. Just takes off right at the top of the lane. Everybody else off the bridle, gasping for air. He wins. Another ride, perfectly timed closing ride where he let the other horse go and made the middle move into the hot pace. He doesn't follow. He sits chilly. He moves out wide. He finishes down the center. He gets the money. He was really a difference maker on a lot of those rides. It's not just that he was sitting on rocket chips.
No. And the other thing about Eric, too, is that, you know, I look at like kind of like a basketball game. Everyone remembers the last minute shot, right? But no one remembers the 4-point play from the first quarter that actually could have been the difference maker. Everyone just thinks the last one was the difference maker. Eric had a run when that rail was gold. He had a run where he knew it was gold and he was winning races with 5-1 shots that he wasn't supposed to win because he was finding the right trip. So it was well earned throughout the entire meet. It wasn't just a kind of a late rally type of situation.
That's a great point. I found him to be very much in tune with those biased days, whereas, and we talked about it on the show at the time, it's not just hindsight because he won the meet. I remember talking about riders we felt like were in or out of tune with the bias when it got severe there for a minute. What was that? In mid-February, and he certainly was. So that's a terrific analogy as well. Let's talk about some other racing from the weekend. Headline event was the Grade 1 Florida Derby. Maybe in some ways more notable for who didn't particularly show up than who did, but perhaps I'm underrating the winner, Known Agenda. Known Agenda seems to be a different horse since Irad Ortiz got aboard and the blinkers have gone on. He's got that classic Pletcher kind of, I want to call it like a grinding style. He was much the best in the Florida Derby. He earned a speed figure, actually a time figure. Excuse me, a form figure on Timeform US of 113, speed figure of 115. Not traditionally what you expect to see in the last race before a horse goes on to the Kentucky Derby, but must be noted, competitive with the contemporaries. I will also note, this is kind of interesting, that the Timeform US coded Florida Derby Day, kind of unusual, coded it as favoring closers. Something that, you know, may come into play here as we talk about some of these other runners. But JK, I ask you, how good was Known Agenda? Is this a serious contender for the Run for the Roses in a few weeks' time?
100%. Absolutely a contender here for a couple of reasons. One, because the other silver-haired guy trains him. And let's not forget that if you want to be really good and you want to win a Kentucky Derby, silver hair is the way to go. Look, you know, Todd was going to continue to improve this horse. I thought Known Agenda ran extremely well. The other thing about Known Agenda, and if you weren't able to see the show, I remember that Paul LaDuca interviewed Johnny when he got off of Known Agenda in the Tampa Bay race, and he said, "I've never had a horse spin his wheels so poorly." Johnny also told Todd, we need to put blinkers on this horse. They put blinkers on the horse. They got him off of the Tampa Bay surface. Voila. Here you are. He's running fast. He's got a hell of a pedigree, by the way. His mama could run. Byrama was a runner and she won the Vanity. They even ran her in the Pacific Classic. I mean, she was a runner. So the pedigree is obviously there. You've got Irad. Yeah, by Curlin, which I mean, if you want to win the Derby, Tappet, Curlin, raise your hand. Who else? Where else do you want to go there? Into Mischief, I guess you probably want to do at this point. But he's an absolute contender. We'll see what Essential Quality does. I mean, he's still kind of my lean. I think Greatest Honor had a little bit of trouble, but he was kind of on probation anyways because his figures weren't quite there. And all he proved to me on Saturday is that he needs an absolute perfect setup meltdown like Orb got for him to win. He's not going to overcome adversity and win the Kentucky Derby. He's just not fast enough to do that. He's proven that. But I thought Known Agenda was really good. He's definitely the type of horse that I'll pay attention to. He's definitely the type of horse that I will keep in the mix. He's got a chance to work his way onto the on top list, but he's definitely in the use list. There is no shot he will not be at least a B horse. At this point, but he's got a real opportunity to become an A horse, depending on how he works leading up to the Kentucky Derby.
Good stuff there. Yeah, I'm cynical about Greatest Honor. Part of me was like, I didn't like the trip in real time, but just seeing how fast the race was, my first gut was a little bit no trips and slow races. Now, maybe slow race is a little too harsh for this, but I can't decide. I mean, I feel like it was slow for a Florida Derby, but then I was looking at the horses who were still left on the trail and the figures they've run, and they're really not that different. So if nobody steps up in these last three prep races, we're going to see, you know, maybe the speed overall of the Florida Derby is not something to sweat so much. What gives me more pause about Greatest Honor is the idea that the track may have been favoring a closing running style, and he just looked flat to me.
I think that your point about no trips and slow races is true. I subscribe to that, but I don't. This was a slow race if Life Is Good was still in the mix. Mm-hmm. But with Life Is Good being out of the mix, this is just a race. To me, Essential Quality is right in this little area, right? Concert Tour, right in this little area. Like, they're all right there in that
95-ish on the buyer scale.
Yeah, 95-ish, 99-ish, 97-ish. That's where they've been living. Now, when Life Is Good was throwing 107s at you, I'm throwing yeah no's, it's a completely different game, right? I think that Known Agenda has a real shot in the Kentucky Derby.
Cancel-like performance from JK on this show. He's been on point in every answer. One thing I will say, not necessarily for the Derby, but in my overall evaluation of the form of runners like Collaborate and Soup and Sandwich, who finished second at 12-1, maybe even to a lesser degree, Nova Rags, because of that idea that the track may have been tilted towards closers, I may give them just the littlest bit of an extra look, almost treating this like it was a fast pace, even though it wasn't coded as such. Again, going forward to the Derby, I don't see any of the three that I just mentioned making an impact, but I will probably look a little bit more favorably on them if they show up in a race like, I don't know, the Pathé Mile. What do you think about that notion generally?
Oh, I can tell you right now, Soup and Sandwich is going to run in the Derby. That's not a dance Mark Cassie's going to miss. It's not a dance that Live Oak is going to miss. I'm assuming it's Live Oak because it's Soup and Sandwich out of a Super Scoop mare, and I'm pretty sure it was the white with the red dots and the black sleeves. They're not going to miss that big race. And Soup and Sandwich ran well, and he's got an opportunity to improve. He really made a big jump up last time. I don't know if it was the no Lasix that really helped Soup and Sandwich kind of progress to that next level, but he makes sense to me. He absolutely makes sense. He was undefeated before that. He ran second. I think maybe he's better than we were giving him credit for.
Apparently, we have an intruder here, JK. Let me go deal with that. I'll be right back.
Okay. Well, while you're doing that, I'm just going to sit here and talk. I've always wanted to do a podcast by myself. And so, why wouldn't I? Oh, Pete should have muted.
That was you.
I was going to keep going, too. We can still do it. Whatever. It's not that bad in the background, right? Oh, Perrin doesn't like it. What's today? Today's Tuesday. I have Gatewood Bell on JK Plus One. I'm going to release it in a little while. And what else? That was fun. We talked about Royal Ascot. Nope. We talked about...
Still talking?
If you would have muted it, it would have been the first ever solo JK Plus One like Matt Bernier. But I had to talk over the beeping. But I think I powered us through.
We can keep it. I was going to just edit. But if you're happy with where that went, I should have. I wasn't thinking I needed to mute. That was, you really are on your game today. I'm very, very impressed. No, fortunately, there was no intruder. It was just Susan forgot to close the door to the bathroom. The steam from the shower here in the cabin set off the smoke alarm. So nothing is on fire. There's no carbon monoxide, and there's nobody, prowling through the place in a mask looking to steal like an old TV or something. We're good. We are good to go. All right, let's get back to the show. For all that, I should probably send Ramon a note that I'm going to be 5 minutes late here, but that's okay. Other thoughts from this Florida Derby or the Florida Derby undercard, JK? Any runners that you wanted to highlight? we have to touch on the Oaks quickly, but is there any other spots you want to go?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot to say. Crazy Beautiful was pretty good. She looked like she was in trouble. I thought Milfoil had the race won at the top of the stretch. Milfoy, excuse me. I keep adding the L's in there. Crazy Beautiful was really good, man. And she's going to take some money, I think, Oaks time too, because I think the Swiss Skydiver word is going to get used a lot next to her.
Yep, just same trainer.
Yeah, but let's see what the Big Filly does this weekend. Looking forward to that, obviously.
99 only on Timeform US, potentially flattered by a closer favoring surface if you want to give Timeform US credit for that. So I'm thinking she's got to get a lot faster. But I will say there was a very interesting tweet exchange between Craig Malkowski and Paul Matisse over the weekend. Paul noting that the three-year-old fillies in particular seem like a division whose numbers haven't improved as much as you would normally expect them to without. And he was saying that he thought that the absence of Lasix could be a factor. And, you know, I feel like I've said this every time we've talked about a three-year-old filly. Well, a little light on figures. Well, a little light on figures. So if they're all a little light on figures, none of them are a little light on figures. And that might make Crazy Beautiful a little bit more of a contender than I'm thinking she is. But I was thinking, probably one to oppose on the big day. And yeah, Milfoy couldn't have had a more perfect trip. And another that, you know, I'm just not excited about either for the Kentucky Oaks at this point, but neither can be, you know, just to sit on the fence a little bit, neither can really be ruled out given the overall strength of the division right now. Agree with any of that?
Yeah, I agree. And here's the thing. We won't be around for opening day. We won't be talking about opening day of Keeneland before opening day of Keeneland. I will say this. Pay attention to the 8th at Keeneland on Friday. It's the Beaumont. There's a filly running in there, Slumber Party, who is fast. And she is actually the winner of the race that Pass of Champagne was bought out of. So if Slumber Party comes back and runs well and kind of franks that figure that she ran that day, I think it bodes well for Pass of Champagne on Saturday in the Ashland.
That's a very interesting point. And we will have coverage of opening day Keeneland on the Plus service. Tyler Wisman and I are going to do a little show for that. Also, In the Money Plus subscribers are going to get treated to a nice show that's going to drop Saturday morning. We've got Nick Tamaro is going to host. Sean Borman apparently going to join. They're going to do the cross country pick five on Saturday. So we've got an all-star lineup for that one. If you want access to those shows, InTheMoneyPodcast.com/plus. Actually, right now, if you sign up for the month, if you sign up for the month on Friday, you will actually get through the Derby for just a month's fee. So if you want to check it out just for $10 and not commit to the year, it's probably a pretty smart one to do that because we've got all kinds of extra cool stuff coming for the Derby. You and I will be doing the regular show on Thursday. That was an amusing exchange, I thought, yesterday, JK, when I said, hey, will you I'm kind of pressed for time in travel mode. How do you feel about doing the stakes races from Keeneland, from Aqueduct and Santa Anita? And you said, isn't that like 15 races? And I said, yeah, that's what I do every week, pal.
Hey, look, that's why you make the big bucks, right?
The medium-sized bucks at best. At best at this point. We got a lot of mouths to feed.
Hey, by the way, I gave away some Plus memberships, I forgot to tell you. I told Kurt at Old Smoke that he could start call Pete, you can include some Plus in your new in your packages, your Old Smoke Clubhouse packages. You can include some of those. So sorry about
that. That's a great idea. Those Clubhouse packages are super cool. That's definitely worth checking out. Of course, we have a little affiliate deal with our friends over there. What's the easiest way? I think the easiest way is to go to inthemoneypodcast.com/oldsmoke, get to their website, and make sure that you use the promo code MONEY for free shipping. Are you ready to officially announce what you have cooking with them?
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. The shirt's been ordered. I'll say this for the first time. We submitted it. It's being created. It will be here. I think we're going to show the shirt on Saturday when all eyes are on racing on Saturday. We're going to show the shirt via Twitter. You'll be able to pre-order it, I believe, on Saturday. And then the shirts are actually going to be in the following week. And then we will open it up to buy. And there's only, we ordered 144 to get started. So we, There's not going to be very many
because I want one. So
So you're on the free list, and it's exciting. Fantastic. And then once those are done, then we're gonna just start banging them out constantly, different designs and rolling like that. So
it'll before be fun. We wrap up with Gulfstream, I'll just throw a horse to watch out there, Sorrel, who ran third in the Orchid. This is a runner who I believe, the rare runner for whom I believe that a mile and three eighths might have been a little too sharp for the way she ran and the way she galloped out. This is one with the race under the belt now for Clément, getting away from the Gulfstream Durf, presumably, and going to a turf course for the next start that's going to be either in New York or Kentucky. I think she'll really improve. And I think, hopefully this effort will look a little dull on paper, and maybe we can get a halfway decent price depending on who shows up the next time. Shout out to Warlike Goddess, who got the job done in that race. Awful beat for those who, and there were many of you out there, who singled Always Shopping, who just got done a dirty nose late on. But Sorrel, for me, is the one that I want out of there. Any other thoughts on that race or anything else at Gulfstream before we maybe take a little cruise over to Dubai for a little 5-minute wrap up.
That was a $25 pick six versus a $7 pick six photo for me. I think that because so many people singled Always Shopping, it probably ends up being close to the same, but still there's something about being able to hit a $25 pick six that makes you happy.
Oh, I thought you had tossed Warlike Goddess in the end.
No. I tossed her in the
that
in
was
the
Jake.
Contest.
Yeah, it was Jake who tossed her. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I got my. We have a group text. It's easy to conflate who did what to whom. And in a contest, sometimes you got to try to crack those eggs. You got to grind when it gets laid on. All right, let's talk about Dubai. Dubai World Cup, Mystic Guide, the Godolphin representative, was very, very good. Made, basically, I thought, mincemeat of the field, kind of looked the winner every yard. Really, my one question for you, it didn't look clearly to be the strongest Dubai World Cup of recent vintage, but do you feel like this horse going forward, do you feel like this is a new established level of form at this point, and that this is a horse that could contend for the Breeders' Cup Classic?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, he's proven at the distance. He is a 4-year-old. You know, he's not the big names that you know make you want to talk and remind yourself about Frosted and Gunrunner and what they did as 4-year-olds. But hell, I mean, he's really good. He ran well. I was dismissive of him because he had that big number and big performance on a sloppy racetrack. I knew he was going to be overbet over there, so I thought there was a chance to try to beat him. And he was completely wrong. I mean, he was awesome. He ran extremely well. So, I actually told my JK plus one guest yesterday, Gatewood Bell, his father obviously has a close connection to Godolphin. I told him that I was the guy that questioned their decision to send Maxfield to California and Mystic Guide to Dubai. So, we know why they make the big bucks, and I'm sitting here doing a podcast with you.
Jimmy Bell certainly knows which levers to pull historically when it comes to these Godolphin runners, and they've got a good one in Mystic Guide.
Price told a funny story about Gatewood about Gatewood having a successful bet when he was very young and his mother thinking that he was dealing drugs.
I can't wait to hear it. That's great.
Very funny.
It's really true, though. Gatewood, I mean, since he was a teenager, has been, I feel like, and maybe that's charitable. I've seen him hanging around the clubhouse and paddock bar betting windows. I hope he, from talking to him, do you think he'll mind that I said that?
No. He addresses it. He addresses it. That he hope he does. He said he hopes he doesn't get any of his colleagues at Keeneland in trouble because there was some underage wagers back in the day, is what he said.
That's very funny. But yeah, he's been a presence. He's been a presence at the paddock bar for a very long time. And I'm very eager to hear more about his new role at Keeneland in this upcoming episode of JK Plus One. When are you going to drop that sucker?
Not on top of this one, but so, you know, this today at some point. Yeah, probably tonight. And then before we leave Dubai, and I'm sure you're going there, we do have to talk about the best horse in the world.
Mishrif?
Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
Unbelievable. And unbelievable price. I'm still trying to wrap my head around what happened here. But the horse was a great price with the bookies in the UK as well. I think closed at 4-1 with the bookies and was, I think, closer to 6-1 on the tote. I mean, I'm sorry. I was putting together the plus notes from my conversation with Naomi, and I was almost like, I wanted to call out the fact that I thought this was a good horse to build around, and I almost didn't do it because I was like, do people really need me to tell them that the 6-5 shot is going to roll? And then I was like, yeah, it's probably not a bad idea just because it is a strong opinion. I mean, how many times a year do you see a 6-5 shot pay 6-1? It was very weird, and the horse could really run.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like a master of like none type of thing. Like maybe people were like, well, yeah, I mean, he won the dirt race, but maybe he's not that good on turf, or he's just not. I mean, he's good on other surfaces, but he's not great. And I'm guessing. I don't know. I didn't fully handicap the race. I was obviously rooting for Channel Maker just because I like Randy Hill and I'm American. But you know, I that was a shocking price, and he did it like. Man, I remember watching the coverage and not that he looked like Uncle Mo, but that Uncle Mo drop your head and run thing. Watching that head on and watching that pan is to me an education on what it looks like when a horse is moving well compared to others. I mean, he had his head dropped and he was rolling, and it was impressive.
Tanking along. We had a good chat on the show last week with Naomi, and you know, I had a question, it was why in the world aren't they running in the dirt race? The stated reason didn't make a ton of sense to me. The stated reason was something along the lines of they want to plan the campaign for the year. They want to figure out if they've got a horse that could win the ARC. Meanwhile, I'm thinking there's a lot of other chances you can do that don't keep you from this potential once in a lifetime Dubai World Cup with not the strongest field in the world and an extra $7 million in the pot. And in a very, very polite way, I think Naomi was pointing out to me that for the prince, the difference in purse between $7 million and $5 million, or $5 million and $12 million, whatever it was, the multiple millions of dollars difference in purse was something that might be able to be found in the couch. So that just didn't factor into it at all. But that still was weird. It does make me wonder if maybe he picked up a subtle knock in the Saudi race, where they had some reason. The Saudi surface clearly very different than the Dubai surface. We saw horses like Rebel's Romance, who didn't really act on the Saudi surface at all, come back and win the UAE Derby. Maybe there was something about that surface that they didn't want to run the horse over. I have no idea what it was. But just when a horse shows, you mentioned Paul Matisse before, and this is a lesson that comes straight from him. When a horse shows that kind of toughness that he showed in Saudi Arabia to be able to close on dirt, you know, I'm going to upgrade those horses that act on dirt when they get back on the turf pretty much every time. And it just looked like it was going to be an ideal situation. Very excited to see what he does next. And I hope the path wends its way to the ARC and then to the Breeders' Cup Classic. What a double that would be.
Something tells me that make-believe his sire's 15,000 euro stud fee is about to go up.
I know you wanted to touch on the ugly incident on the Dubai undercard. I don't want to end on that, so I'll think of one more quick thing to ask you after that. But give us your thoughts on that awful incident.
Yeah, not good. And you know, it's. I used to tell kids all the time when I coached, when you come into my office and on a Monday and you slap me, Tuesday slap me, Wednesday slap me, Thursday slap me, Friday try to give me a hug, I'm going to think you're slapping me. And the problem is that when, you know, Carlos David was associated with Jason Service, that people are going to make the assumption that funny business is happening. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know, but that's what you got to live with in that situation. Maybe it's unfortunate. Maybe he knew there was funny business. Maybe he didn't. It doesn't matter, but he's got to own up to it and he has to do better. And by doing better, the first thing you can do is not pay someone to run your social media that doesn't understand what the hell's going on. Because from what I understand, him tweeting after the race, boasting about the horse winning, was not him actually tweeting. It was someone that he has hired to run his social media. Nonetheless, dude, bad look, buddy. Like, it's just a bad look. And you got to get out in front of it and get out, and then get out from behind, get out behind it and try to make it right. It's unfortunate. And, it's very sad, for the racehorse. Great performance.
Zenden, the horse, of course, the win was in the Golden Shaheen, and Yeah, it's not that I don't have sympathy for people who work with the horse, obviously, but my brain also just goes to that this is an industry-wide problem that will hopefully, in the process of you know, being able to address, knock, knock, where there's just not a lot of confidence in the sport's ability to produce, to police its own rules as far as medications, etc. So it makes it hard for me to vociferously, I'm not going to vociferously defend, because where there's smoke, there's fire, but I'm also not going to lump on because I just don't know. So it just, for me as an analyst, it just makes you want to throw up my hands. I think that's a great point and a worthwhile point about, you know, what caused the kerfuffle on social media and what a horrific look that is. You know, do better. Do better. That's the big takeaway, I think, as far as the messaging around the horrible event goes. But again, I'm wishy-washy here because I, you know, I also, obviously it's a terrible incident, and you know, people who love this horse are suffering, and I don't like the idea of lumping on them with so much uncertainty around. Okay, before we let you go, JK, and move on to the next part of the show, you must be very much looking forward to the start of this Keeneland meet. Any thoughts about that? Any thoughts about the big contest coming up, the Grade One Gamble? You looking to be? We'll talk to Jim about that a little bit later in the show. But is that something you're going to be likely to participate in this year, or are you going to have to work?
Oh yeah, no, I'll play a contest while I'm working. It's all good. Yes, definitely going to do that. I'm excited about Keeneland. You know, I'm really looking forward to. I think that what happened at Naira this year with the 20-cent pick six being changed to not being a jackpot and the removal of the computers. It's kind of made me realize that I think I'm really excited about playing the pick six every day at Keeneland. It's that, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's a dollar minimum. And I'm going to get involved there. I'm starting to learn that the more legs that are involved in a sequence, the better chance that horse players can regain some of the edge that they lost to technology. And it's still, there's not the edge that it used to be, but there's more of an edge than there is in a double pool. Because a double pool, the math is right there. And the people that do math that are smarter than all of us can take advantage of that. It's much harder for math to hurt you in a pick six sequence. So I'm really looking forward to that at Keeneland. I'm looking forward to just seeing that just seeing those beautiful visuals of Keeneland and hearing Kurt Becker. And I'm excited about Keeneland. And so that's what I'm really looking forward to.
Have you looked at the extended forecast yet? Does it look like we're going to catch a proper spring day down there?
Look, there's no way that whoever's in charge of this whole thing, this thing being Earth, is going to do what they did to us in 2020 and not give me beautiful 2 days at Keeneland. I'm just not even worried about it. I know I'm good because they can't do that. I've been locked up and I've been a good soldier for a whole year. Give me nice weather Keeneland, please, on Friday and Saturday.
That would be fantastic. The contest, for those wondering, Saturday, April 10th, there is ADW participation. We'll put a link in our Keeneland page, inthemoneypodcast.com/Keeneland, that gets you there. You heard me do the ad at the top of the show about the promo code. If you're a new customer to Keeneland Select, that you can pop in there and get some extra money to fuel you along the way. JK, look forward to seeing you this weekend, and you know, be good till then. Next up on the show, very happy to be joined by the hosts of the new Exacta Box podcast, Ramon Dominguez and Jose Francisco Rivera. Gentlemen, we'll start with you, Ramon. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you, Pete.
Jose Francisco, everything good?
Everything's okay, Pete. Excited to be with you guys here in the Money Media Network.
Excellent, excellent. We're really excited about having our first Spanish language show on the network. You guys might be new to podcasting, but you've been doing YouTube videos for a while. Ramon, we'll start with you. How did this idea for Exacta Box come about? Where can folks find your previous content on YouTube? And what are you looking to accomplish with this venture?
So Exacta Box is something that emerged from Jose Francisco and I meeting through a mutual friend, and we both are from Venezuela. However, we didn't know each other prior to connecting through ExactaBox or creating ExactaBox. And we both have, however, a background in horse racing, different, but still in the same industry. He was a race caller, and I will let him tell you more about himself and his background, professional background. So we got talking about the possibility of creating something for the Spanish-speaking horse racing fan, and we say we need to do this, and we started working on it. So far, we have done different interviews with mainly jockeys from Latin America, and actually, we had some with a groom as well. And so, but the content can be found on YouTube at our channel, YouTube ExactaBox.
Fantastic.
And our goal, and the last question, I'm sorry, is our goal is to continue to expand our brand and continue to reach the audiences, the Spanish-speaking audiences that like and follow horse racing, and to bring them a product unlike what they're accustomed to, because we felt that although there is some people who share interesting content, and a lot of times it's just handicapping the races, we didn't feel like there was one place where people could hear the stories, so many great stories that need to be told and need to be understood by people about the beginnings of these professionals and really what is horse racing all about and the beauty of the sport and so on. So we're excited to bring that to the fans.
We're excited to be a part of it. We encourage folks listening to our flagship show to let their friends who might be Spanish speakers or at least Spanish understanders to check out ExactaBox and everything we've got going on. Ramon, you're obviously super well known to most of the people within the sound of my voice. You're the best jockey many of us have ever seen. Jose Francisco, I know you have a high profile as well. Might not be as familiar to all of the listeners on the flagship show. Tell us more about your connection to horse racing.
I was a horse racing announcer in Venezuela for about 10 years. Then I began working on baseball. I'm a sports journalist. I've been working in sports about 30 years. I'm 47. I began very, very early. So after horse racing, I went to baseball, and I'm living in Miami since 14 years ago, between 2008 and 2019. I was working on ESPN like a sports journalist, like announcer in baseball, in basketball, in talk shows, on radio, and but I've been a big fan of horse racing my whole life. So. Since last year, knowing Ramon through Gonzalo Anteliz, our mutual friend, this was the idea to get an opportunity to show the U.S. Hispanic target the horse racing. I think this is a very nice opportunity. For example, Pete, during the beginning of the pandemic, I was trying to listen to any podcast in Spanish about horse racing, and I didn't find anything. Mm-hmm. Because I think the Hispanic fans or the horse racing doesn't have any room or any space in the digital platforms to enjoy this industry, sports, this show. So that's the reason why Ramon and I have been working in this project. And I'm very, very happy, excited to work again with the horse racing after a long pause, but I'm here again.
I want to go on a slight tangent and ask you a baseball question. We've got opening day coming up, and over the years I've noticed that it feels like, in terms of South American countries, that football, soccer, is king everywhere, but that's not true in Venezuela. Venezuela, it feels like baseball is right there at the top of the sports pyramid. Am I correct in that observation, Jose Francisco? And why is it that in Venezuela, baseball is so popular?
Because we are Caribbean. We are like Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, and a part of Mexico, and Cuba, obviously. Venezuela, Cuba, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, we are Caribbean. We are baseball. Our prime sports is baseball. But in Venezuela, Pete, it's a very different case considering Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. Horse racing has a very, very important place in sports. Maybe not right now because of the diffusion of the promotion of the show was almost ended about 10 years ago. But from 1970 to 2000, 2003, the two prime activities followed by people in Venezuela was baseball and horse racing. And I'd like to take advantage of the comment of the baseball because next week is the opening day. I'm talking about Exacta Box and sports bets and this interesting world of opportunities right now about the changes in the sport, in the professional sports in the USA. You can go to MLB.com, Pete, and you can pick the 15 winners of the opening day, and you can win $200,000. You can see now how baseball and professional sports is changing in terms of sports bets and maybe another new order in this aspect.
It's a great point. The sporting landscape really changing. For so many years, we're the same age, more or less, Jose Francisco, and for so many years, the professional sports were, you know, not embracing of gambling, and the fact that they've been a little bit more honest about part of the appeal of their sports has definitely changed the way things look, and there might be some lessons and some changing that horse racing needs to do to keep up, essentially. A very long time ago, horse racing was the only gambling game in town. Now it's one of many, and that's an interesting conversation to have down the line. Ramon, I want to bring it back to you, and I want to ask you how it works for you to have gone from being the athlete to being the one in the arena, making the split-second decisions, getting the praise, getting the criticism, to now being on the other side of the microphone and making comments about tactics in races and things like that. Isn't it an easy or difficult transition to go from being the athlete to being a commentator on the sport that you love?
It is a different, certainly there is a transitional piece because I am interacting with people now in a different way, and I'm bringing this message in a different way. Before, I really had to answer to the trainers and the owners about how the horse ran and so on. But in many ways, a lot of similarities with the work that I am doing right now, because it's something that I equally enjoy. And it is to putting myself in the boots of another jockey and kind of get a sense of what is going through their mind and what is happening out there on the track. And now one thing that I am able to recognize, Pete, is that throughout my whole history riding races for a long time, there are so many things that you learn as a jockey that you really take for granted, that is something that no everybody understands or even knows about. So, and little things are simple that jockeys may do, or just the dynamic of the race itself. And now when I talk about it, sometimes I'm being naive, just kind of bringing it up on the surface level, and people is like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. So that is a pretty nice for me to know that I'm educating people in the process and talking about something from a different perspective. You and I are watching the same race, but our perception and our way to process the race is very different. So that's something that I very much enjoy right now.
It's very well put. One of the stories in racing right now that we talked about a little bit earlier on the show, this unbelievable run by Eric Cancel at the end of the Aqueduct meet, winning so many races in these last 2 days. I know you had the pleasure of speaking with him for a show that I imagine will be dropping a little bit later this week. But I just wanted to ask you, can you remember in your time, Ramon, anything quite like the end of this meet in terms of a rider getting so hot and coming from so far back with so few races remaining. Can you think of another instance like that, or is this a pretty unique accomplishment by Mr. Cancel?
So now that you're asking me, what comes to mind, and it is a little bit before my time here in the U.S., and perhaps I was here, but I think it might have been the year before or 2 years before I got here. So it is Chen Sellers and Jerry Bailey were fighting for the title at Gulfstream, and I heard that Chen Sellers was equally like Kendrick Carmouche, four wins ahead, and Jerry Bailey ended up winning five that day, last day of the meet. So it's incredible. I very much enjoy speaking with Eric Cancel, and of course, I don't want to just say everything because hopefully, again, that can be people can listen to the actual interview through your podcast or through the podcast. But one thing that really stood out to me is number one, it is obvious that this young gentleman has a lot of abilities on top of a horse, but he's also very, very humble. But the one thing is that I wanted to kind of get in his mind and to get a sense of how he felt that day and how he approached the day, because it is a huge deal to win six races in a day, but go the last day of the meet, four races behind the leader, and be able to win six races and throughout the six races, just maintain your calm, not allow the pressure that is there, whether we want it or not, is there, like, oh gosh, I'm getting closer. I interfere with the calmness that you need to possess in order for the horses to do well. That's something that I'm amazed, and I just give him all the credit in the world for being able to do that, because to me that defines who he is as a jockey and his abilities, not only physically, but his mental ability to stay calm during that testing time.
I can't wait to listen. I may need my daughter, who's a far better Spanish speaker than I am, to help me translate in parts. But I'm very much looking forward to hearing that. Definitely one of the most interesting stories in racing right now, to get into that kind of zone and have that kind of finish. Jose Francisco, I want to ask you, with your depth of experience in the sports world, covering everything out there, but always keeping your interest in horse racing, what is it about horse racing that makes it an appealing sport to you that maybe we could help emphasize a little bit more in the way we cover the game to make other people in the wider sporting world appreciate horse racing for the great sport that it is?
Pete, we have to appeal to the young fan. For example, I have two kids, 12 and 10 years old. And they play baseball. They play baseball every week, two or three times a week. But when I am at home with them and I tell them, hey, this is the MLB Network. Let's see Tampa Bay against Yankees. No, that. That's boring. They don't want to watch baseball. And I think right now, baseball and horse racing are sports for all people. I think we have to look for the young target. That for me is very, very important. So that's part of our job, our work in this moment. That's our vision and mission. And I think that's the most important thing right now, talking about horse racing. We have to go to that people that is not a frequent fan, or the people that goes to the racetrack every day, or the express bet, or any sports platform user. We have to go to the whole audience. I think we have to rescue the numbers of the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown races. I think that's the prime point that right now, the prime issue of talking about horse racing.
Do you have any specific ways that you think we can do that?
Social media, Pete, interesting stories, personalities that go to the horse racing, invite YouTubers, invite influencers, invite people. Okay, that shows, okay, this is Santa Anita, this is Gulfstream, this is NIDA. I am enjoying the show. I am watching horse racing. This is interesting because of whatever. But you have to go to that target and look for the YouTubers and the people that the young fans are following right now. For example, Pete, I am a horse racing fan since I was 4 years old. And why I am a horse racing fan? Because my father, every Sunday, watched the horse racing on the TV. And we went to bet the Cinco y Seis in Venezuela. It is like a pick six year. It was a very traditional game in Venezuela the whole year. So by that reason, I was a horse racing fan. Because I was growing up watching every Sunday the horse racing.
It makes sense trying to introduce it through, if people aren't as inclined to be sitting home with the family watching on a Sunday, you've got to figure out who and how they're consuming their media and try to feature and bring the game to them in that regard. It makes sense to me. And I think what you guys are doing on Exactabox and providing more content to an underserved portion of the market is certainly a good way to help. One last question, and I'll ask it to both of you, because I know, you know, as much as the show is going to feature great stories, you're also going to be doing some racing analysis and looking ahead to races. No race more anticipated in the USA than the Kentucky Derby. Do either of you, and we'll start with you, Ramon, do either of you have any thoughts on a horse that you have your eye on in this year's edition of the Kentucky Derby?
Well, there are a few, and I am just waiting for this weekend. Next weekend, there are a few more stakes that will be certainly important to make the final decision as to who it will be, like my top choice or my top pick. So right now, Essential Quality is definitely a horse that stands out. I really like him. Of course, Hot Rod Charlie ran so well in the Louisiana Derby. But then there are other horses that we just watched the Florida Derby. And of course, I'm not giving up on the favorite Greatest Honor. I think that he's a very good horse as well. We'll see how he comes out of this race. But the horse that finished second in that race, Soup and Sandwich, a horse that has run only three times, and he finished second. And I thought that he has shown that he's still very green, which is something, an upside. He's a horse that is going to continue to mature. So it is a matter of knowing how much, of figuring out how much he can improve leading to the Derby. But I think it's still a pretty wide group of horses. I don't think there is a horse that, in my opinion, stands out. But Essential Quality, if I have to choose one right now, certainly would be my choice.
It's a nice looking short list there from you, Ramon. Jose Francisco, how about you? Is there a particular runner who's caught your eye so far on the Kentucky Derby trail?
I have two: Essential Quality and whatever Hirado Ortiz rides. That's my.
Well, that's looking like it's going to be known agenda, right, at this point.
Yeah, but yeah, right now it's known agenda. He won 138 races in Gulfstream Park. It's a new record in that meeting, the championship meet.
It's been an incredible run that he's on, and you can do a lot worse. And it seems to me that you know, he obviously moves up, tends to move up horses. So we'll definitely see what happens next. Of course, Arad and his brother were on that first podcast episode of Exactabox we put up there on the network. Folks should check that out as well. Guys, I'm going to let you get on with your week, but we look forward to hearing much more from you along the way with Exactabox, and we'll look forward to bringing you back in, make you do a little double duty and come on here and chat with us in English from time to time too. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having us, Pete.
Thank you very much, Pete. And this week we're going to have Eric Cancel. By the way, Pete, in less than 24 hours, we have almost 2,000 views on YouTube of the interview Eric Cancel.
That's fantastic. Great timing. What a great get. Well-timed stuff from you guys on that. We will be chatting soon. Next up on the show, very happy to have joining us a podcast host in his own right, a real advocate for horse players as well, and he runs a great contest, too. Jim Goodman of Keeneland. Jim, how are you doing? What's the mood like down there in Lexington?
Nice introduction, Pete. Thanks. The mood is one of anticipation. We are very fortunate. Our governor has been very cooperative with us along the COVID guidelines, and we're going to be able to have a pretty good number here on the track on Friday and Saturday, opening up the weekend, close to 7,000 if everybody shows up. We sold 3,000 general admission tickets. They went in about 30 minutes when we put them on sale last week. And between the dining rooms, we're socially distancing 6 feet apart, so the capacity is about a third of what it normally is. But we are hoping to have a crowd of about 6,000 to 7,000 people here on Friday and Saturday. That compares to 25,000 or 30,000, but we're thrilled to have just regular fans here for what should be a really great spring meet.
Folks, we're going to be in the area. The best way to get tickets, I imagine, it's some type of lottery deal. Keeneland.com, is that the link to send them to if they're interested in trying to get one of those coveted seats for some days? I mean, I imagine it's too late for this weekend, but for later in the meet?
Yeah, we've still got some availability during the week, especially on Wednesdays and Thursdays. So you can go to Keeneland.com/tickets. And it's not a lottery. It's basically if they're available, we release them. So if you had somebody that grabbed those tickets last week and is now releasing them, you might get lucky. But obviously the demand far exceeds the supply. So weekends are incredibly tough. I've had to say no to a lot of people this week, and I don't like to do that, but they've been very understanding that it's a hot ticket, and it's very difficult to take care of everybody that wants to come, and they all want to come Bluegrass Day, which is Saturday.
Weather looks unbelievable. It will get a little cold in the morning, cold in the evening. Like, the low's down to 41, but looks like the high's predicted to be 61 on Saturday. Chillier on Friday, but no wet. I mean, I don't mind. Maybe I'm just weird. I don't mind 48 if it's sunny and I'm getting horses to run at Keeneland. Have you been hearing what I've been hearing? You think we're going to have a couple nice days this weekend?
Yeah, Friday's going to be cool. I mean, we're going to dip down into the 20s on Thursday morning, I guess. But then it gets a little warmer on Friday. Friday can be cold. If you're coming on Friday, you need to bundle up because it's a cooler place than most places. You got a lot of wind coming through here. But Friday's going to be cold but dry. And Saturday should be in the low 60s and should be beautiful. For early April, that's about as good as it gets in Kentucky. So it's going
to
be fun.
I didn't get to go to Cheltenham this year for obvious reasons. But I'll bring my Cheltenham wardrobe. Be ready with a lot of different layers. And it sounds like I can leave the rain gear at home, which you always need out there. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. One of the highlights for many horse players, contest players especially, of course, of the year is the Grade 1 Gamble coming up pretty quick. I believe it is it April 10th that is the day of the Grade 1 Gamble? Do you have spots available for players? I know there's the opportunity to play online. What does everybody need to know about getting involved in this year's Grade 1 Gamble?
Okay, so as of right now, I am full at Keeneland. The problem that I have is socially distancing everyone. So I've got a large room, but I can only seat like 140 people in there. So by the time I get some guests in there, and I can't seat people together. So you can understand my problem. If I've got a single, they've got to take one table.
Yeah.
So we are full at Keeneland. Unless you are, if you know somebody that's coming by himself and you want to join him, that's fine. If you want to get together with somebody else. But right now we're full. You can still play on ExpressBet, on TVG, on 4NJBets if you're a New Jersey resident, and on NairaBets, everyone except New York residents. So that's how you can play. It's going to be I've got well over 100 entries already. I've got probably 80 entries here on site. I think I'm going to have 200. So we're looking at
that's great.
$40,000 for first place and plus a BCBC and a NHC spot. Hope to give away at least 8 NHCs and 5 or 6 BCBCs. So it's looking like those things could happen. You know, a lot of people could say, well, I'm not going to be able to come, so I'm not going to play. But most people, I wanted to do it on a Saturday. It's a great card that day. It's Cool More Jenny Wiley Day. And we have 3 stakes races and full fields. It ought to be a great racing day. I did it on Saturday this time thinking it would be all online, but then I stole some seats when we decided to have guests. So it's going to be a hybrid contest. NHC numbers will only get for online points instead of on track. But it's going to be a great tournament. And we got 11 races that day now. And
great.
So very... very good betting races that day, I'm sure.
Folks can pick and choose their spots. Super important in a contest like that. If you've got any questions, you can reach out to Jim. You can reach out to me. I'm happy to facilitate and help in any way that I can. Hit me up if you've got questions about the Keeneland contest at Looms Boldly or through the contact area over on InTheMoneyPodcast.com. We're also going to have more information on InTheMoneyPodcast.com/Keeneland. Jim, for folks that want to reach out to you, what's the best way to do it?
Either email jgoodman@keeneland.com or my direct phone number in my office is 859-288-4261. Be glad to answer any questions. And if you want to go ahead and register, you can go online at keeneland.com/racing/wagering. And that's where all the information is. It's very simple. You can sign up and pay your deposit or pay the full amount. Whenever either the $100 deposit or $3,000 full amount, pay the rest of it by the deadline. If you want to play on TVG, you've got to sign up by Friday, April 9th at noon. Same way with Naira Bets. If you want to play Express Bet, you've got until lunchtime on Saturday that you can fund it through your Express Bet account that you already got. So they're really great people to work with over there. So they're extending it out to Saturday.
Any final qualifiers this weekend, or has all the qualifying happened that's going to happen and it's time to put up the money?
No, I believe that I haven't looked at his schedule, but McKay was planning on having more contests this weekend on horse tourneys. So, yeah, take a look at horsetourneys.com, and I believe there's a qualifier on either Friday and Saturday or Friday and Sunday. So you should have qualifying chances this weekend as well.
Yeah, don't miss out. And maybe you can feed into them this week, horsetourneys.com, to check that out. I know JK is particularly excited about participating in your Pick 6 pool this meet. Remind folks what kind of terms you've got for the Pick 6 at Keeneland for this upcoming meet.
Well, we don't have a jackpot. It's a $1 minimum, just a straight pick six. On Saturday, the 3rd, it's going to be an all-stakes pick six, which
Fantastic. Is
kind of unusual. We added a stakes race when we dropped the Thursday for this year. So we have 6 consecutive stakes races on Saturday, and we've got the, you know, post position was drawn as right before we taped this, and got a couple of 6-horse fields, but we got some really good races on that day. Bluegrass got 9 in it, with obviously Essential Quality is going to be a huge favorite there, but you got some other nice stories with a Brad Cox, Essential Quality. You got Chad Brown, Highly Motivated. You've got a horse that ran less than a week ago in the, Jeff Ruby Stakes is coming back to run. So, a lot of stories here for the Bluegrass and for the Ashland on Saturday.
Oh yeah, the Ashland, I'm really looking forward to it. But I will just say, from a horse player point of view, having a couple of shorter fields, especially with the dollar minimum, I don't think it gets diluted that badly, the payment. I think you can argue that, especially in a, you know, non-jackpot, you're already dealing with something that's much player friendly than the usual. And I think that I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I think that the big fields in the sequence, from a horse player point of view, they can be overrated. You know, maybe from a track management point of view, you want more betting interest, but from our point of view, I'm okay with that. Let me just go ahead and try to pick those races, spread where I need to spread, and give me a chance to get a better payoff without, you know, those low minimums that I believe lead to more efficient pays. What is the takeout in that $1 pick six, Jim?
Takeout is 22%, but it's a very there's a 5 out of 6 minor pool, so we pay out, if there's a carryover, we still pay out 75% of the total pool for the day to the 5 out of 6, and we carry 25%.
Okay.
So it's not as egregious a takeout as some of the jackpot wagers that we hear about on Twitter. So.
Not just Twitter. JK and I whine about them plenty, just on our network as well.
Yeah, jackpot wagers are, you know, there's a place for them, but I'm not a huge fan of, especially the pick six jackpot. I think it's an egregious takeout for a player to play into unless it's the mandatory payout day.
Totally agree. It just, I feel like the real long-term economic impact of it is probably a lot worse than it appears superficially because of all the money that gets held back. But I'm very happy the way you're doing the pick six. Look forward to supporting that wager early and often in this Keeneland meet. Obviously, we're going to have plenty of Keeneland coverage on the In the Money Media Network. Very excited to be partnering with you guys once again. But folks looking for more, much more on Keeneland, have to check out Jim's podcast, the original Keeneland Select In the Money podcast. You were gracious enough to lend us that name. Tell folks more about your podcast, when it goes up, where they can find it, and what folks can expect.
My podcast is a cooperative effort with Tom Leach, who's the voice of the Kentucky Wildcats basketball and football teams. And Tom's a great handicapper in his own right. And we record those for every day of the Keeneland meet. They will be up on Thursday, let's say around 10 a.m. for the Saturday card.
Great.
And about 2 days ahead. So we'll do Thursday morning for the Friday card. So it'll be about 10 o'clock on the Friday card. And then same thing on the rest of the days, 10 a.m. the day before. And we cover normally the stakes races. We give a late pick four or a pick five. We talk about, Tom's got some real good insights. He does a lot of our trainer interviews. So he'll throw some questions on me sometimes. I'll pick a horse and he says, oh, by the way, I spoke to Wesley Ward last night, and he really loves this horse. And I said, well, you should have told me before I recorded it, but he likes to surprise me. And it's available on the Keeneland Select website, keenelandselect.com, or it's available also on wherever you want you hear podcasts, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. So just check us out there. It's called the Keeneland Select In the Money Podcast, and hopefully we'll give you some insight. And Tom hit the pick four last week that we gave out at the Florida Derby. I missed the leg before the Florida Derby, but anyway, Julian Leperu beat me on a nose.
Oh yeah, that was dirty. I know.
Yeah, but it's a great ride. It came from way out of it on the turf race, and he nailed the favorite on the wire. So that's the way it goes.
A lot of our listeners are using the Apple Podcast app, and if you just put in Keeneland in your search, it'll pop right up. Keeneland Select In the Money Podcast. We encourage folks to check it out. Jim, one of the reasons he's so good at his job at Keeneland is he's not just part of track management, he's a player, and that comes across in his analysis. And then you already mentioned, I mean, Tom Leach, and that ability to provide not just that institutional knowledge of Keeneland, but also bring insights from the trainers. I have a similar thing sometimes, Jim, with JK, where he'll one-up me when I mention a horse, and he'll say, I texted the trainer, and he says he's going to need the race. And it's like, well, I wish you'd told me that before the show, but, you know, you can't.
Yeah. those guys like to name, they like to name drop, too, you know.
Oh, no doubt.
It's part of their ego. So I get it. That's all right.
We have to start a club, Jim, as the less famous halves of podcast duos.
Yeah, I feel for you, buddy.
And I you, my friend. Well, that's a great note to end on, Jim. Look forward to hopefully having you back on. We'll be listening to you over on your show throughout the meet. I will be there this weekend. I won't be there for the Grade 1 Gamble, but I'll be watching and hopefully covering from afar. Really looking forward to this Keeneland meet and appreciate everything you do for horse players. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Pete. We're looking forward to it as well. It's just so nice to be back to some semblance of normal so we can have people in the paddock out here. So, and if people are coming down, I just want to make a note real quickly.
Please.
We're doing a really good job with social distancing. With mask use, you're going to have to wear your mask if you're not sitting at your table eating and drinking. We want to keep people safe. We want to get this thing back where we can be back to normal by the fall. So if you're coming down here, just plan on taking care of yourself and being very considerate to our other players that are coming from all over the country here.
That's a great message and one that people need to be aware of. We're so close now to being able to have potentially a normal Saratoga, potentially a normal Keeneland Fall, potentially a normal Del Mar. So, you know, be smart about it. Even if you're double jabbed, be smart about it. We want to get this train back on the tracks, as it were, and very happy to have it be leaving the station from Keeneland this Friday. Jim, thanks again.
All right, buddy. Have a good one. See you this weekend.
That's going to do it for this edition of the show. One more time, we'll thank Jim Goodman, Ramon Dominguez, Jose Francisco Rivera, and of course, Jonathan Kinchin. Also like to thank our partners, including Woodbine Racing. Looking forward to the resumption of their racing, hopefully in just a couple of weeks' time. Keeneland and Keeneland Select, told you about them, and this promo code ITM21 that you can use to unlock some free money up at the top of the show. Please support them. Our founding partners, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, support their mission at trfinc.org/players and 10 Strike Racing. Always like to root for our friends in the purple and black. Most of all, though, I'd like to thank all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do. If you have a question or comment, hit us up on Twitter. I'm at LoomsBoldly. JK is at UTBigHair or through InTheMoneyPodcast.com, the contact link on there. You can get a message to us as well. Consider checking out In The Money Plus. This is a great time to do it because you'll get all of our Keeneland coverage all the way through Derby for just $10. Very competitive to compare it to some other premium stuff that's out there. Going to be all kinds of good things. You'll be hearing more about that in themoneypodcast.com/plus for that. That's going to do it. This show has been a production of In The Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.